Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
There were great crowds on the Gulf Coast of Texas for the third test launch of Starship. And we're joined by Stephen Clark from Mars Technica. Stephen, good to visit with you, and thanks for the time.
Anytime, Steve. Happy to be on the show.
Yeah, and Stephen, we have talked about this before. You've seen this rocket up close, the Super Heavy booster and Starship on top, the stainless steel monster. And in just their third test launch, they were able to get to orbital velocity. In other words, they were able to get Starship, or the upper stage, into what amounted to orbital velocity. They could have taken it all the way into orbit, but didn't. The Super Heavy booster almost came back for a controlled landing. They made a lot of progress on just their third test launch.
That's right, Steve. Major progress for Starship. I think with what we've seen on this flight on Thursday, we could say that Starship is ready to carry satellites into orbit. It has a long way to go to do some of the other things that SpaceX wants to do, like carry people or go to the moon, for example, or do refueling in space. But it's basically ready to do the job that most of the world's other rockets that are expendable do and deploy satellites, and it can carry up 150 tons or more of payload on each mission, which is an order of magnitude over what the Falcon 9 rocket that SpaceX currently flies can do, for example. So we saw Starship get into space. It progressed significantly further into the flight sequence and flight profile than we saw on the first two flights. And we saw Starship go all the way to reentry over the Indian Ocean about 50 minutes or so after launching from Texas. And just spectacular video. If your listeners haven't gone on YouTube or seen any of that video, it is spectacular, particularly the reentry video is just mind-boggling from someone who has seen numerous space missions executed, launches, reentries, landings. To see that video so crisp come back live through Starlink. SpaceX was streaming that video back from Starship through its own Starlink network. So SpaceX has this whole ecosystem of space capabilities that most governments in the world would be envious of. And it was just an amazing experience to be there in person, and incredible to see that video come back from reentry. And again, I think we can say the Starship is ready to carry satellites based on what they demonstrated on this mission. And I wouldn't be surprised if on the next flight or the flight after that, they actually do put some Starlink satellites on there to begin rapidly deploying more Starlink capability into orbit. It's, you know, Starship serves Starlink, Starlink serves Starship. It's all part of SpaceX.
Yeah, and let's start with some of the milestones. Number one, yeah, on this third test flight, the 33 Raptor engines all seem to fire and operate flawlessly. I guess we haven't seen all the data, but from what we were able to observe, the Super Heavy booster itself did its job almost flawlessly. The only fly in the ointment was bringing it back, and they were able to do that return burn, if you will, like they do with their Falcon 9 first stages, and they have tremendous success at getting those back to these drone ships or landing them back at the pad, if you will. But the goal is ultimately is to get Super Heavy, this booster, back to the pad. But let's start there. It appeared to operate as designed up until the point of where they would ultimately gently land on what would be a barge or ultimately on land.
Yeah, exactly right. And you mentioned this booster stage has 33 of these methane-fueled Raptor engines. Each one of these engines is big. Each one of these engines is the size of a base of an SUV. And so there are 33 of them clustered under the bottom of this booster. And it's a very complex propulsion system. And having all those engines fire in unison, uniformly, without any failures is a significant accomplishment. And remember, Steve, they did the same thing on the last flight back in November, yep, which didn't make it as far as this week's flight. But the booster on that last flight in November during the launch sequence also performed perfectly from all accounts. So that's two flights in a row they've had perfect engine performance from the Super Heavy booster for the Raptor engines. That's a big, big deal going forward. And, you know, you mentioned the only fly in the ointment being the fact that they weren't able to recover or control the final splashdown of the booster. I think that's, you know, that's not entirely surprising to me. It took SpaceX something like 20 flights to recover a Falcon 9 first stage intact and get that to the point where they were able to reuse it. 20 flights. I don't think Starship and Super Heavy, the booster stage specifically, will take that long because SpaceX already kind of knows the algorithms and the techniques and methods they need to recover a booster, since they do it so often with Falcon 9. But it wouldn't be surprising to me if, you know, it takes one or two more missions to recover the booster and get it back to the Earth's surface intact. I think, you know, I think that is not entirely unexpected. And again, 10 years ago, every rocket in the world was expendable. And just having the immense capability of 150 tons to orbit that Starship provides, that it demonstrated on Thursday, is incredible. And I think, you know, give SpaceX a few more months, a few more missions to get the recovery and reuse down.
And let's maybe stop right there for a moment and talk about it. They are prepared to move forward very rapidly, that they have Super Heavy boosters and the upper stage Starship kind of ready to go. If they get the thumbs up, it looks as though that we may see multiple launches and test flights before the end of the year.
Yeah, there are currently four vehicles, Starship and Super Heavy vehicles, either finished or in production down in South Texas. And SpaceX, depending on whether you ask SpaceX or even the FAA, which is responsible for regulating and overseeing all these launches from a safety perspective, both of them are saying 6 to 9 more Starships this year. And I would say 9 is probably ambitious, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see 5 or 6 more Starships before the end of the year, because I think they're at a position now where they can probably launch the next one in the May-June timeframe, based on what we saw from Thursday. And I think getting to almost a monthly cadence by the end of the year is not out of the question.
Wow. very impressive. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we'll talk about the performance of Starship or the upper stage that actually made it to orbital velocity, but they didn't put it into orbit. And we'll get into some of the things we learned or we know about at this point in time. And I would assume SpaceX at some point in time would release more data from the flight and what exactly happened when that upper stage reached that key orbital velocity. But they didn't put it all the way up there. And we'll get into that with Stephen Clark. I was joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, and he covers space flight for Ars Technica. We'll be right back here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. Stephen Clark joining us, covers space flight for Ars Technica. Steve Thompson in. The launch, the third test flight of Starship. It was fascinating to watch it launch from Texas. I absolutely have to get down there and see this. I want to start there. When my kids were younger, my wife and I were down in Florida, and I think I've mentioned this before. We went out to Kennedy Space Center in the middle of the night, went out to the viewing site, and waited for a pre-dawn launch of second-to-last flight of Columbia. And that was incredible. And I can imagine that seeing a Starship fly is pretty spectacular as well, Stephen.
Yeah, it really is, Steve. I had the fortune of seeing a few space shuttle launches towards the end of the program as well. And, you know, visually and with the sound and the vibrations, I think the Starship is more spectacular than the space shuttle. And, of course, the space shuttle will have people on it, and that's a different level. Maybe Starship one day will as well, you know, to ramp up your nerves and anxiety. But seeing Starship, just incredible.
Yeah, and it will be a while before it's ready to fly humans into orbit and beyond, goes without saying. But some very exciting steps. So we talked about Super Heavy before the break, and Starship itself, or the upper stage, made it to orbital velocity. But let's start with why they didn't put it into full orbit.
Yeah, see, that's a good question. I think they targeted a velocity that was just short of the speed they would need to reach what's known as a stable orbit. So to reach low Earth orbit, you have to be traveling a certain velocity, generally around 17,000 miles an hour, plus or minus, depending on the exact altitude. That allows the satellite to continue circling the Earth and with enough speed that the Earth's gravity will not pull it back into the atmosphere. And SpaceX intentionally on this mission targeted a speed of about 16,500 miles an hour, so just a little bit shy of orbital velocity. And the reason for that is before they go into orbit and put the thing into space where it's going to stay for days, weeks, or months, they want to be able to prove that they can relight the Raptor engine, one of the Raptor engines on Starship, to do what's known as a deorbit burn, to kind of slow the velocity and guide it back into the atmosphere in a controlled manner. Because SpaceX and you know, space sustainability people who are interested in making sure there's not orbital debris that's clogging low Earth orbit, interfering with other companies' operations or SpaceX's own operations in many cases, they want to make sure that SpaceX can bring Starship, which is a giant vehicle the size of a 737, basically the largest single flying object ever put into space. The space station is bigger, but it's made of multiple modules that were assembled. Yeah. So they want to be able to prove that they can bring it back in a controlled manner, because they don't want it stranded in low Earth orbit where it could become a debris risk. It could explode eventually, put shrapnel in low Earth orbit that could collide with other satellites. And they also don't want it coming back to Earth in an unguided way. They don't want it reentering the atmosphere and over a populated area if it comes back in an uncontrolled manner, and it could pose a risk to people on the ground. And Starship is built out of stainless steel, as you mentioned up front in your introduction, which is actually a really good metal that can withstand some really high temperatures. So, you know, bringing Starship back uncontrolled, a lot of that's going to survive reentry. It won't burn up fully, so that would create kind of a falling debris risk around the Earth. So they want to make sure they can not strand it in low Earth orbit. They want to prove they can bring it back intact in a controlled manner before they actually put it in space and leave it in space.
So they were able to get right to the edge of orbital velocity. So they were able to accomplish that. And what else did they do? We heard about payload doors. What about these Raptor engines? Were they able to relight these? What do we know? What were they able to accomplish on this short trip partway around the Earth?
Well, so they have three key demonstrations they wanted to do while they were in space. One of them was the payload bay door opening and closing, which by all accounts that worked as planned. So that they can open that door and deploy satellites. There are no satellites on this mission, but on future flights, they could have a stack of Starlink satellites or customer payloads on there. They could shoot out the side of Starship almost like a Pez dispenser. Yeah. So they tested that mechanism, and it appeared to work well. Another test they wanted to do in space on this flight was a cryogenic transfer test. And basically, the Starship burns on really super cold liquid oxygen and methane fuel. And they wanted to test the ability of Starship to transfer some of that really cold propellant from one tank to another inside the vehicle. And this is kind of a precursor to future missions where they want to be able to refuel Starships from one ship to another. Like, they'll dock together and refuel each other in orbit. That test, from what I've heard, was initiated. I haven't heard any results on whether it was completed successfully, but apparently the first part of that test was initiated as expected. So that's kind of a question mark there. The other test they did not do was to reignite a Raptor engine, one of the six engines on the Starship upper stage, in the vacuum and the airless environment of space. Mm-hmm. And they actually skipped over that because there was a control issue with Starship. It was rolling in orbit in a way that it wouldn't be safe to reignite one of the engines. So that's kind of – didn't seem like it was an engine problem. It was just a matter of the ship was spinning, and that would not allow this is me speculating, but potentially would not allow the fuel propellant in the tanks to actually get to the engine, because imagine spinning on a merry-go-round or a carousel.
Sure.
You know, you're talking about centrifugal forces that kind of would force some of the propellant away from the engine intake. So that's just me speculating, granted, but that the ship was spinning, and the SpaceX said that was the reason they didn't restart the engine, and that would be one big reason, I think, why the ship spinning would impact the ability to reignite the engine.
So the videos a lot of people have seen, and if you haven't, of the launch, there's a camera on top of the tower at launch. It is really cool, launching from Texas. The other video that's been replayed, millions, who knows, been seen by billions of eyes already, is the reentry phase. And they were able to use Starlink satellites to pick up the reentry in the past. They weren't able to transmit video, etc., of reentry and capture that part. What do we know, and we don't have a ton of time left, about the reentry? Because you talked about getting a vehicle into space, then controlling it in space, and then bringing it back safely to Earth is a challenge. Typically, since the very early stages, this is Yuri Gagarin and the Soviet Union and the first human to reach orbit and return safely back to Earth was a Russian. And then, of course, he had John Glenn and the Mercury program, and Gemini and Apollo were capsules. SpaceX uses a capsule. The Russians still use a capsule. The Chinese use capsules. The space shuttle is really the only other vehicle we're aware of to reach orbit and carry humans safely back to Earth. And we know how complicated the space shuttle and the heat shield was. That's going to be a gigantic challenge from Starship to figure that part out.
You're right, Steve. I think that the space shuttle is probably the closest analog or comparison to the design of how the Starship is going to be able to re-enter the atmosphere and be recovered, although the landing is a much different method. What we saw on the test flight, the video was just amazing, as I mentioned earlier. Seeing that play out live, it was unprecedented. We've seen replays. Sometimes they have cameras on some of the capsules or the shuttle, even where they would bring the camera back and replay it after they land, but seeing it all play out live was incredible. And seeing the plasma build up as this thing is coming in the atmosphere at 16,000, 17,000 miles an hour, it's actually compressing the air in front of the capsule and stripping electrons away and ionizing these air molecules in the upper atmosphere that causes them to glow. They're basically electrified. And it was just seeing that pink hue, the orange glow of those ionized, that ionized gas build up around the winglets of Starship, the flaps and the main body was just amazing. And you know, they didn't make it deep into the atmosphere this time. Not sure why. I might have been related to that roll or control issue we talked about earlier. But, you know, they got through the launch sequence this time. They've tested out and demonstrated and validated a lot of that. I think one of the next big things they need to focus on that may take a few flights to master will be the reentry process and making sure that the ceramic tiles, the heat shield all work out and making sure they can control the ship in orbit to make sure it's in the right orientation to safely reenter the atmosphere.
Yeah, but still, all in all, I would think SpaceX, and then again, their partners at NASA, which are counting on this system to ultimately land humans back on the moon, have to be thrilled with the third flight to check a number of boxes, and they're on their way.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a learning process. The way SpaceX develops these rockets is kind of, you know, a fly, fail, fix, fly again, which is usually a quicker way to develop rockets. It's a cheaper way to develop rockets. But the one caveat of that is you need to fly often. I think SpaceX is set up to fly again soon.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, great. Once again, really appreciate your work and Ars Technica. I check it out all the time. And once again, that is ARS and then Technica, TechinIca.com. Stephen Clark, good to visit with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, there he is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.